Planning and Planning and Zoning Commission to order at 5 PM. Could we get a roll call, please?
Merkin?
Here.
Barnwell?
Here.
Holmstrom? Absent. Smith? Absent. Miller?
Here.
Steele?
Here.
Cagle?
Here.
Okay. Are there any changes or additions to tonight's agenda? Hearing none, the agenda stands approved. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes from our last meeting? That would be our November 2nd. Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. Time for public comment. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments on issues that are not scheduled to be heard tonight. So anyone who'd like to offer any comment to the planning commission? Great, thank you. Item number 10, election of officers for the 2017 calendar year.
I make a motion that the current officers be held over for 2017.
So that is Vice Chair, Jerry Gable.
Yeah, and you?
Chair. And those are all the officers that are there.
Correct.
Okay. So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Let's do a voice vote on this. Or would you rather have a roll call?
Roll call.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to carry over the current officers for another term. Could we get a roll call vote, please?
Merkin?
Aye.
Barnwell?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Steele?
Yes.
Cagle?
Aye.
Motion carries. We have a meeting scheduled in front of you for 2017. Do you need action on this, Jerry?
Yes. The motion will begin.
Voice vote, okay?
Sure. I move the option.
Second. A motion and a second to adopt the meeting schedule as presented by the staff. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. We're just flying through this.
You bet you move.
All right, we have in front of us tonight several changes to the land development regulations as a result of the adoption of the C2C plan. There is some redundancy in the staff reports, but that's just because they kind of all apply to the same thing. I'm not exactly sure what format we're going to take these in, but we will begin with the revisions to Chapter 85. Are they? Yes, revisions to Chapter 85. We have a Anne? Thank you. How would you like to take these? Do you want to just take them all in one fell swoop?
I have a presentation that will walk us through it.
Okay.
And I'll actually explain why they're individualized as well. I think we can probably see without turning the light. Maybe, Stephanie, could you turn the lights down a little bit? Just one of them? Yeah, either one is fine.
Okay.
Maybe switch them? There. Does that work?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So presentation overview, I'm going to go over what my two areas come from the C2C implementation matrix. Then I'm going to delve into kind of a broad scale, the four chapters that are affected by these proposed changes, and then we'll talk about the next steps. I'm going to start with the tasks from the C2C implementation matrix, which, as you discussed at your work session, has been approved and is in effect. Two of them that we wanted to bring forward immediately were developing and adopting a C2C plan amendment process and establishing a public outreach toolkit, breaking that into two segments, actually. What's before you tonight is just the amendment process. The public outreach toolkit will come, I think, January, February, next spring, and, again, that lies on my lap. And then the other one is developing solar farm regulations. This actually preceded the implementation of the adoption of the implementation matrix by about a month, so we're a little bit ahead on that. But what I'm going to do is I have a few slides on solar farm regulations, and then some on the C2C amendment process. And then I'm going to go chapter by chapter and just highlight. You'll see a slide, when I get to that, I'll explain it to you, that I have in one column the changes that are being brought forward because of the C2C amendment process. The other column is the solar farm regulations. They're done chapter by chapter because when it gets to the Board of Supervisors, they're actually codified by chapter, and they each need to have their individual ordinance. So really what you're doing is you're considering changes to adopt solar farm regulations that affect many chapters, and then amendments to remove reference to the old county development plan, and that affects several chapters. So it's easier to do chapter by chapter, though. Does that make sense? I mean, okay. It seems tedious and cumbersome, but really in the long run, when it comes to printing, adoption, and everything, it's much easier to go forward this way. Stop me at any time with questions, too, please. I have a question slide at the end, but I think as we go forward, it might be easiest. Just some quick slides on solar energy, because it is still, at least there was a learning curve for me on this. I'm still relatively new in Story County, kind of harkening back 10 years ago, however, 12 years ago when we were talking about wind turbines, that learning curve that we had to go through. Now we're applying solar energy. There's a fantastic report that's put together by the American Planning Association, and that's the professional affiliation that planners belong to throughout the United States. I really use this as a jumping point and found some information, and I'm not going to read this to you. You can read it on your own, but just I do want to share the opening statement. One of the keys to local solar market growth is a supportive regulatory environment. And we heard several times when Florida Power and Light came in to create the wind farms in Northeast Story County, they chose Story County because we had the regulatory framework in place. They knew what to expect. Yes, our regulations are pretty in-depth, but they knew exactly what to expect, how to meet those, and then they did further expansion, and I heard that as a common theme throughout the process of working with them. So that kind of really relates, I relate this statement back to where we were 10, 12 years ago. What is that large scale, large utility scale solar farms? Just what it says, it's the ones that are going out to the grid. It's not our individualized ones that are powering a homestead, whatever. We already have those as accessory uses in the regulations. Those have already been addressed because they were addressed like 4 or 5 years ago. For an individual, you know, powering, taking their unit off the grid and being able to power their own facility or own house. This is for that commercial size development, just like that picture shows.
We don't have any of those in Story County yet, do we?
No, we don't. We have the individual ones.
Yes.
But
not commercial.
No commercials. There are two types, main types of solar energy technologies. I cannot say this, the PV. Photovoltaic. It's the only time I'm going to say it.
You did.
Emily's probably laughing at me because I've stumbled over that word so much. Our regulations are going to highly discourage the CSPs, the concentrating solar power, the image on the right. These are parabolic mirrors. We do not have the solar resource in Iowa and the Midwest to really support these efficiently. To the best of my knowledge and through the research, and Carla, maybe you've done some research too because you're nodding your head, but I mean, we do not have the resources that the Southwest United States has, and that's where you see these. These are very intensive land uses, hundreds and hundreds of acres in size sometimes. So our regulations, when you get to reviewing them, do prohibit these because they are just not appropriate for Midwest and Story County. We do want photovoltaic PV. I don't even know why I try. Just some highlights. This is a little bit dated, only a year later, though. Some statistics on solar in Iowa is growing. 2015 data, 46 solar companies with about 350 employees. I know this has increased the past year substantially, in fact. We rank 32nd nationally. We're, top for wind energy nationally. And we continue to increase in our solar installations. What I wanted to show you, I mean, this is where all those different companies are, the 32 odd companies throughout Iowa, everything from manufacturing and installation to just doing the solar panels. Pretty spread out throughout Iowa, but definitely a concentration in central Iowa. I want to just focus a little bit on this slide, and I tried to enlarge where we are in Iowa. This is a map that shows what our solar outage or output is from a daily standpoint in kilowatts per day, which is how it's measured. We're in that 4.5 to 5 range. You kind of see it shelves down into northeast Story County, I mean northeast Iowa. If you look at the wind resource map, it's very similar. Actually kind of eerily similar in that shelf that comes down. But we do, we're not as concentrated as the Southwest, but we do have adequate resources for solar in Iowa. But one of the criticisms has been, and sometimes continues to be in Iowa, especially this time of year, sun goes down fast and comes up late. And so is the opportunity to have solar in Iowa. With increasing innovations in technology, the tilt of the solar panels can affect how we can successfully achieve solar and capture that solar radiation. And having these as you can't read the table on the bottom, but that table at the bottom shows is that you simply have to apply that growing technology and assess the angle that's appropriate for whatever month it is. And when we're looking at commercial solar farm, these are not hand manipulated. These are just like our wind turbines, powered by an entity that can. I remember I was amazed when they told us they would simply turn it on and off the wind turbines in Florida. Same type of innovation and approach. So just keeping that theme of looking at what has happened with wind power, what this chart shows you is the cost of wind power, which is on your left, and then the capacity. And then on the bottom axis is the year. So the beginning year is 1980 all to 2015. When wind power first came out, started evolving, I shouldn't say first came out, that's not a correct statement. When wind power first started evolving in the United States, it was very costly. And turbines still to this day are incredibly costly, but that cost has gone down substantially. Not only has the cost gone down, their wind capacity has increased. And so what has happened has been the capacity has increased, the costs have gone down. You know, we have taller towers, larger blades, increased capacity. This has been the trend over the past 35 years. We're starting to see a very similar trend with solar, too. I can tell you firsthand experience when I was 10 in Jefferson, my father put solar panels on our house. Well, attached to the south side of our house in Jefferson, Iowa, and we had them on there for 10, 15 years. He handmade them, construction aficionado, and good at it. But I remember hearing my mom and dad argue about how much they cost to even hand make them. So what we're seeing is, again, the technological advances have done such great wonders in so many areas that solar is not being immune from that. So again, same pattern, increase, costs are going down, capacity increasing. So what we're looking at is common standards, looking at everything from height. I'm not going to spend very much time on this slide because I'm going to get to the standards here relatively soon. But I want to go back and say the guidance really that started kicking this off was that APA briefing paper. And then we did look at other counties throughout Iowa and the Midwest. We didn't look at what Arizona put on their books because that's not appropriate. We don't have that type of resource. But we followed that stratification, that layout that you saw on the map earlier, say where are appropriate jurisdictions that have adopted solar farm ordinances and how can we look at theirs and not reinvent anything. And we really looked in great detail at our CUX regulations, our wind farm regulations. So we brought forward common elements, a CUP process, adding supplemental standards, definitely looking at decommissioning because these do affect our landscape. and what happens when they're no longer able to be used and as was initially intended, and then what do we want to see from a submittal to bring it forth to the Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Adjustment. So the standards address several sections that I'll get into later when again specifically Chapter 90. Any questions on solar farm? Just the basic 101, quick and dirty. C2C amendments then. Once a C2C plan was adopted in June, the next step was the implementation matrix. And then with the implementation matrix, one of the key tasks was we needed to have a process in place to actually amend the C2C plan so that it didn't just become a static document that would not be living and guiding us as we went forward. So two things, we wanted to build a process to amend the C2C plan into the Code of Ordinances. We don't have that currently with our county development plan. We never had that. And again, keep in mind, this is our first comprehensive plan at Story County, so very important that we codify that too. And then we definitely need to review or remove all the past references to the county development plan. And I'm going to apologize right here because I cannot quit saying CDP. I maybe after 15 years of saying it, I'm so indoctrinated in it, but I'll try to say we're removing CDP to C2C, but it's going to be a while for me. We want to define the process for rezonings and text amendments. The C2C plan has this great zoning compatibility matrix that will help you all as you're reviewing rezonings and really provide some guidance to the general public when they're reviewing the county. I almost said it. The cornerstone, the capstone plan, but we needed to codify that process then in our rezonings and text amendments and actually build on what we had because it wasn't very clear from a guidance standpoint. We really wanted to make it more clear so the process was clearly delineated. So that's where the kind of background, jumping right into Chapter 85, General Provisions and Definitions. This is a slide I mentioned earlier. This is if a chapter has amendments that address both C2C plan amendments or adoption and solar farms, I have a slide where it has one on the left side of the column and one on the right. We have a couple chapters where it's just solar farms and a couple where it's just C2C. So I tried to condense it. On the general provisions and definitions, the entire chapter is being revised because we have to renumber to add definitions. So that's just a very basic one. From C2C plan adoption, obviously, this is a common theme. I'm going to say it one time. We strike all references to county development plan, replace with cornerstone and capstone. We're also proposing removing the goal statements. The old CDP had four simple goals. The entire county cornerstone and capstone has an entire chapter of goals, and so we reference that. And by no means do we want to include those and make this a very, very lengthy chapter. And we also need to revise the definition of natural resource areas to reference the C2C future land use map because it said CDP. So from the solar farms, we added definitions for commercial solar energy system, concentrated solar power, ground-mounted solar access, solar easement, and solar energy device, both active and passive. So those are the changes for Chapter 85. Are there any questions? Chapter 86, district regulations, deals solely with the county development plan and striking all the references to the county development plan. We also propose amending the exception to the 35-acre minimum in the A1 district to remove reference to the tiers of the county development plan. We applied the LISA exception differently when it was within the three tiers of the CDP. Those tiers no longer exist, so we just tightened that up and made sure it was clear and meant our goals of our new comprehensive plan. Any questions on Chapter 86? Chapter 90, conditional uses. There's two slides on this one. One, again, we're striking the references to the county development plan, and that deals solely with C2C plan adoption. The heart and soul of the Chapter 90 changes, though, deal with adoption and implementation of solar farms. Adding a new Section 8 in the supplemental standards entitled Commercial Solar Energy Systems. We have standards that address height, setbacks, and separation, glare, ground cover, and buffer areas, fencing, signage, approved solar components, compliance with applicable codes, underground installation of utilities, lighting, utility notification, then discontinuation, decommissioning, monitoring and maintenance, and avoidance and mitigation damages to public infrastructure. And those are all laid out. Those are become all new language in Chapter 90 in the supplemental standards. Vast majority of that language, if it's not unique to the solar farm regulation itself or the solar farm technology itself, is copy and paste from the CLECs. The decommissioning and discontinuing decommissioning, we simply took the language that has been molded and tested through the commercial wind energy system and brought it forward into this. So it should look very familiar. We also added 23 items as submittal requirements, and it's lengthy so that we can ensure the standards are satisfied. And it's a similar approach that we did with CUX as well. So any questions on Chapter 9? Oh, the other thing I don't have the slide, we're amending the table of conditional uses to show which zone districts these are allowed in. Any questions on Chapter 90?
We have no proposals now or any discussion going on about solar farms. This is purely proactive.
Right. Chapter 92 is the administration's chapter of the land development regulations. This chapter, the proposed changes deal solely again with the C2C plan adoption, amending the table of contents, kind of minor, but we did really need to reorganize it and need to do some wordsmithing and renumbering. Section 92.03, referencing the CDP, and 92.05, adding text referencing the C2C. A lot of acronyms here. Section 92.06, the section that deals with rezonings, clarifying the procedural steps. We had some unnecessary language in there that wasn't very clear, so we really tried to look at how rezonings are processed right now, because it has been tested and is a very solid process and approach. Actually codify that. In the past, that has been done by the Board of Supervisors by resolution. We took a step back and added it back to the ordinance and added it and proposing it. It should be a part of the Code of Ordinances. Actually building some additional, build the submittal requirements into the procedural steps, so you didn't go through procedural steps and then it referenced submittal requirements later. It was like a one-stop shopping. And then, of course, renumbering accordingly. Exact same thing with the text amendments for Section 92.07. And then Section 92.08 deals specifically with the amendments to the Cornerstone to Capstone Plan, and that is an entirely new process. But the process, if you've read 92.06 and 92.07 as proposed, is the same thing essentially. And it does allow for them to be an amendment to the comp plan to be processed accordingly, hand in hand with the rezoning too. That would not be precluded to go forward. And then we have to renumber 92.09, 10, 11 because we have a new section. Any questions on Chapter 92?
Yes. Under the 92.07. Is this application for text amendments from outside your department or otherwise?
It applies whether it's staff initiated or, as you have on your agenda tonight, is proposed by a member of the public too. It applies no matter how it's.
Okay, so when does this filing fee come into play?
Well, obviously the county doesn't pay a filing fee.
Huh?
The county doesn't pay a filing fee as an the county is an applicant proposing,
right.
But if an applicant, if a member of the public wants to propose an amendment to the ordinance, they do pay a filing fee.
Why?
Because we do have costs associated with staff time to review it. If it's staff initiated, it's been part of our work program, or we've been directed to do it. If it's not staff initiated, it does take away from other work program items and then require staff review. There's legal notification requirements. And honestly, when we build our budgets, we do propose we're going to have this legal notice for this. We have an idea of what we build in our budgets. And in this case, it allows us that filing fee at least recoup some of that legal notification requirement or legal notification costs. We do there's a substantial amount of staff time involved in doing text amendments when it's not being There's a substantial amount of time involved when staff is proposing it, but even greater amount of time when it's not being proposed by staff.
And so it would be similar to like a conditional use permit. There's an application fee.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
But have you determined the filing fee for text amendment?
Yeah, I think it's the same as a rezoning, isn't it?
Like $275, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but...
$325.
And I haven't looked at our fees, obviously, for a couple of years, but our comparison to some of our peer counties. And not necessarily saying our surrounding counties. I'm talking our peer counties in size and regulatory approach. We are below them. We don't, I know at one time we weren't even recovering at least 5% of the cost that we were putting into reviews.
We're not proposing a raise either.
So does that answer your question, Nancy?
That answers my question. But then, of course, my mind is going, hey, if I want a text amendment, then I'm going to go talk to Jerry so that he can suggest it as a staff writer.
Well, but then that has to come back to me. It all has to be directed.
Well, I understand it, but to avoid the fee.
Well, but we have to be directed by the Board of Supervisors. So you'd want to go to the Board of Supervisors. Okay. I'm on the alternatives and next steps. Just like a normal application has gone through interagency review, I'll be honest, I did start with the initial drafting of this, so I put myself on the slide too. Planning and Development Department was very instrumental, though, in helping me get this to the position it is right now to be in front of you. And we also sent it for review through the County Attorney's Office, and based on some changes, some revisions did make changes. So staff does recommend approval of the proposed amendments to the Board of Supervisors, and I've already talked about that, the procedural matter. It was on purpose that they're individually by chapter, so we ask that you can probably take them as four separate action items. I know that's cumbersome, but I would prefer that so that we can go forward that way. Your alternatives, you can recommend approval of the proposed amendments as drafted to the board. You can recommend approval as modified to the board. You can recommend denial. Initially, I had these scheduled for actually next Tuesday for first consideration. What we've decided is we're going, just as Rick mentioned in your work session, we're holding off everything till January 3rd for first consideration to let the new board get on and make the policy decisions at that point. But still, it's before you tonight. Do you have questions? And to aid you in the making motions individually, I put your agenda items up there too, in order, so you can take them one by one.
Say it again, Leanne.
When you need to make four separate motions, I put the language up there for you. Since there's four, separate chapters.
Okay, so we'll just take turns in making these motions.
We'll come back to this. I'm going to jump up the speaker here a little bit. All right, so we open the public hearing to public comments. Is there anyone who would like to step up to the podium and discuss or offer comments on any of these items? All right. So we have no comments from the public. Was there any comments submitted in writing or by email or phone call?
I have received nothing.
All right. All right, so look, as Leanne mentioned, so we have both purely really procedural things combined with some substantive things in each chapter. You don't necessarily have anything to do with each other, but it'd be best if we can do it portion by portion, chapter by chapter. The bulk of the substantive changes are with regards to solar farms, and they are scattered through all the chapters, really.
Though
in chapter 85, it's mostly definitions, which I doubt we have too much argument with. But are there any discussion we need to have about the substance, primarily of the solar farms?
I think Leanne did a great job in explaining even the difference between the two types of commercial solar farms, which educated me.
Can you say it, though?
Huh?
Can you say PV, though? I'm joking.
And based upon growing alternative energy situations within our the country, I think it's a real good idea to have that in place so that anybody that wants to come in, as in the wind farms, knows what the rules are ahead of time and what they have to adhere to.
My only question on reading it is why the CSPs were prohibited. My understanding is because they're not appropriate for Iowa.
They're not appropriate. The technology is not, cannot really be successfully implemented in Iowa as a solar resource. The amount of radiation we receive on a daily basis, that in concert with the sheer size and magnitude of them, trying to weigh the ongoing preservation of agricultural resource in Story County. When you're looking at a 6 to 10 acre site for the PV systems, as opposed to a 200, 400, even a 50 acre site for a CSP. And very rarely do we outright prohibit anything in our regulations, but the more I looked at this and the concerns, when appropriate, they're amazing resource, but we just don't have that ability, at least the way technology is at this point.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments about the solar farm portion? The main substance then of the C2C plan references is in regard to, I would suggest, is in regard to the procedure for amending them or applying to amend them. Are there any questions about that? So let's chop this up by chapter then, and we'll ask the commission if you have a motion on chapter 85.
I would move to approve the proposed revisions of chapter 85.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Merkin and a second by Barnwell to recommend approval of the amendments to chapter 85 to the Board of Supervisors. Could we get a roll call vote, please?
Miller?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
Barnwell?
Yes.
Motion carries. Do we have a motion on the amendments to chapter 86?
I make a motion that we accept the proposed revisions to chapter 86, District Regulations of the Story County, Iowa Code of Ordinances.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Miller and a second by Merkin to recommend approval of the proposed amendments to chapter 86 to the Board of Supervisors. Could we get a roll call vote, please?
Barnwell?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
We have a motion on the amendments to chapter 90.
I move that we adopt the proposed revisions to chapter 90.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Good, that one, Jerry. Second. We have a motion by Merkin and a second by Cable to recommend approval of the proposed amendments to chapter 90 to the Board of Supervisors. Roll call vote.
Barnwell?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
Yes.
Miller? And we have a motion on the amendments to chapter 92.
I move the adoption of the proposed revisions to chapter 92.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion by Merkin, second by Barnwell to recommend approval of the proposed amendments to chapter 92 to the Board of Supervisors. Roll call vote, please.
Miller?
Yes.
Barnwell?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
That.
And thank you guys for going through that. That actually makes it a lot easier to organize and go forward for the adoption.
Thanks, ma'am.
Thank
you.
Good job. I know you put a lot of work into that.
Just put it on if you need to.
Yeah, you did. You take that.
And we are on to,
I think, wait a minute.
Item 12.5, consideration of the YSS text amendment.
You're on. I'll put it back in.
I like this last one, too.
you, Emily. Ready, Aaron?
All right.
Okay, as you mentioned, this is a text amendment. The applicants are Andrew Allen and Renee Dablin with Youth and Shelter Services, or YSS. This is Ordinance 01-16. It's a request to amend Chapter 90 in the Story County Land Development Regulations. It's a request to amend Table 90-1 of the Table of Conditional Uses. The request that was submitted was to include this language, residential treatment, lodging, and grounds, which again would provide for a conditional use permit submittal process in the A1 district, and then also other districts at the discretion of the Board of Supervisors. What's driving this request, or the interest for this request, is YSS's interest in acquiring a property south of the City of Ames at 5500 240th Street to use for a world-class adolescent treatment facility. It's a 74-acre parcel. It's located in an A1 district of the county, and as I mentioned, it's south of the City of Ames, but it's also within the Ames Urban Fringe Plan area, which again is a document that was adopted in 2006 involving Story County, the City of Gilbert, and the City of Ames. The YSS plans to use the existing building on the property to use as potentially for an office, and then lodging for the family of the participants. And then they also had plans to construct a new building, potentially west of the existing house, for lodging and recreational use. The concept that they're interested in is primarily to teach the participants about sustainable living. They have plans to grow various crops in the northwest portion of the property. We have a diagram or a concept drawing that they submitted to kind of show you conceptually what is planned for that area. So again, the Ames Urban Fringe is a document that was approved in 2006. It includes a 28E agreement that was adopted in 2011. Provides details about the role of the cities, the role of the county, what happens with an amendment to the plan, zoning authority, subdivision review, and the annexation process. There is a statement in the 28E agreement that talks about the county's zoning authority, and it's under 5111. It states nothing in this agreement shall be construed or applied to limit the county's legislative authority or discretion in adopting or amending its land use regulations. The city has some interest in this request. The city council on the 22nd of November did pass a motion asking their staff, the planning and housing staff, to provide some information to the Planning and Zoning Commission, to the Board of Supervisors, with regard to this particular request. And they are suggesting that a note be placed on that conditional use table to provide applicants information when they're interested in conditional uses that would be located in an A1 district, that would be located within the Ames Urban Fringe area, if they're within the urban service area or a rural urban transitional area, that there may be some special conditions that would be required of the city, such as signing an agreement to annex when that area is prime for annexation, a waiver of protesting future assessments for public improvements, and then acknowledging that development must connect to city services at the city's request at property owner's expense. So this just gives you an idea. Again, this is all about a text amendment. It kind of helps put things into perspective. Again, it's driving the request for the amendment. This is a 74-acre parcel. It's south of the city limits of the city of Ames. City limits is just north of Highway 30. We're west of South Dakota. Again, it's about a 74-acre parcel. There is most of it, or a good portion of it, is wooded. The dwelling, and then there's an outbuilding that's in the kind of the northeast portion of the parcel. And again, what they're proposing to do is to do the agricultural growing in the northwest portion of the property. So, again, conceptually, this is provided. It was submitted as a part of the request. Again, shows you the drive coming in, goes to the existing house. There's an accessory structure here. Again, this is potentially be used for an office, lodging for families and friends of the participants, new building for housing of 50 units for participants, recreational spaces, and then the agricultural crops in the northwest area. From our review, we are suggesting, planning and development staff is suggesting that the request be broadened to allow more human service type uses. So we're looking at a definition to add to that table that would state human services facilities and programs. It would be provided or permitted through the conditional use permit process, allowed in all districts except for Greenbelt Conservation if granted a conditional use permit after being reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission and then approved by the Board of Adjustment. Currently, there is some language on family homes in the county's land development regulations that address persons with intellectual disabilities. It includes up to 8 persons. That's under Iowa Code 135C. Child foster care is identified under Chapter 237 of the Iowa Code. And then elder care is also identified under family homes. Up to 5 persons. Those are permitted uses in an AR, R1, R2 districts of the county. The proposed human services would, in an A1 district, would not be permitted if they have a high land evaluation site assessment score. If it's in the 267 to 300 range, which is pretty productive farm ground, they would not be permitted in those districts. Just to give you an idea of the spectrum of human service type uses that we might see with the review process of a conditional use permit, could include residential group homes, client home, licensed facilities for physical and mental disabilities, outpatient treatment, persons with substance abuse, mental health, home health, nursing, medication management, public transportation services, nutrition programs, disaster preparedness. Again, those are some of the things that we might see. The Story County Land Development Regulations suggest that we look at standards of approval for reviewing a request to amend the ordinance. We are to look at the comprehensive plan as well as the scope and purpose of the ordinance. We had a pretty extensive C2C review process. We received a number of comments from the general public through that community visioning and open house process. Just in the area where we asked for input on weaknesses with regard to threats involving governance, leadership, and learning environments, we had comments. There were duplication in some of these areas, but the need for non-athletic youth facilities, youth opportunities outside areas, outside of Ames, need to develop a county-wide network of services, conflict of preserving farm ground versus developing rural residential pockets, housing needs, need to develop a county-wide network of services, and then we heard about limited pool of medical services not spread evenly through the county. Strengths, community gardens were identified, supported agriculture and local food systems. We have good volunteer network in place. There was an example that they provided about the Threshold Learning Center. Lots of business growth in Ames and surrounding area, and then healthcare. Looking at some of the specific goals on how this these goals relate to the request at hand, goal three, consider the availability and capacity of local services and infrastructure when determining future land uses. Strategies encourage new urban density development within city boundaries or within appropriately planned locations as designed on the future land use map. Five, establish open space buffers or greenways that provide connectivity from one city to the next when adjacent to ag areas or natural resource areas. Minimize development impacts through transitional uses, edge treatments, and other appropriate measures. Again, the 74-acre piece that they're looking at, largely wooded and natural vegetated areas along much of the perimeter of that property. Goal eight, ensure that land use transitions are gradual or designed to reduce potential incompatibilities among land uses. The last one, agricultural conservation designation area, encourage high volume ag lands to remain as ag and discourage non-agricultural development of such. We did run a LISA evaluation on this property and it came in having low LISA scores. Looking at just the zoning ordinance in relationship to what's being proposed, Chapter 85.022, B and C. B says provide for a balance between the land use rights of individual landowners and the economic, social, and environmental concerns of the public when a city or the county is developing or enforcing land use regulations outside of corporate limits. C says to ensure orderly development and provide for the regulation and control of extension of public improvements, public services, utilities, and improvements of land, and the design of subdivisions is consistent with approved comprehensive and other specific area plans outside of corporate limits. 85.024D, 2 and 4, foster cooperative and collaborative relationships between rural and urban residents and public and private enterprises that enhance the quality of life assets in the county. Also promote cooperation on economic development efforts to retain and attract businesses. Last one, implement cooperative planning efforts among local governments to ensure orderly and efficient development at the fringes of Story County communities and to minimize urban-rural conflicts. We looked at comparisons with regard to human service regulations with some of the neighboring counties. Webster County allows clinics, charitable institutions for treatment of disease, juvenile residential home or facilities, chemical dependency or mental health facilities through the granting of a conditional use permit in an A1 district or a TA, transitional agricultural district. Boone County allows health care social services in a C1, which is their commercial district, as they're permitted. Polk County, varying depending on the number of persons being served, but with institutional residential, up to 8, they're permitted in their residential districts for the most part in a mixed use, and then above that it requires a conditional use permit, submittal, and approval by the Board of Adjustment. Clinton County allowed group homes for persons with physical and mental disabilities in the A1 Prime Ag District, an agricultural recreation district, and in the suburban residential districts and urban residential districts with a special exception use permit by the Board of Adjustment. In summary, planning staff position is that the proposed text amendment for the human services uses, with the exceptions to the family homes, is best provided through the conditional use permit process as stated in the ordinance. It says it provides for the flexibility and identifying special conditions without making the ordinance unreasonably complicated. Also gives you the tool to evaluate potential impacts with regard to the site, to the neighborhood, environment, and local street system. We are not suggesting or recommending any additional detailed standards other than the normal standards of approval. The benefit, again, of approving the request, again, it would reflect some of the points that were raised by the citizens with regard to the C2C plan as far as some of the weaknesses, and it kind of touches on some of the strengths. Would provide for an opportunity for human service uses to be located in various districts of the county. outside of those that are identified under the family home provisions. And again, from a review and regulatory standpoint, it would provide the Planning and Zoning Commission Board of Adjustment more options in requiring conditions if it's needed or necessary. This brings us to the letter. We did provide a copy of that letter that we received from the City of Ames. Again, it's more of a suggestion just for potential applicants who have submitted a conditional use permit request. If they're in an A1 district, and if it's within the Ames Urban Fringe area, if it's within those two districts, urban service or urban, rural urban transitional, that there may be other special conditions or standards that the city may require. So that brings us to alternatives, taking into light the agreement with the City of Ames, Gilbert, and Story County. Again, this is not, it's not viewed as a regulation. It's more of a kind of a heads up, if you will, to inform the applicants, again, that there may be additional standards that might be required. Brings us to the recommendation, which is 2. Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval of the Code of Ordinance text amendment with additional amendments. Again, the suggestion by the city to the County Board of Supervisors. And with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions. And again, the applicants are here as well.
Can we go back to the slide of the language for the additional amendment?
And again, it says any proposed conditional use permit request located in an A1 district and in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan and within the urban service area or urban transitional area may be subject to other city special conditions such as annexation and other service requirements.
That's just a catch-all statement, basically, because right now there's nothing in the Urban Fringe Agreement that says that other requirements for the city aren't applicable. Correct?
Well, if you're in the transitional area, that I can tell you that from their practice, from their standpoint, they have required it for subdivisions.
But not for conditional use permits.
No, not.
There's nothing right. In the fringe area that speaks to conditional
not specific
at all.
Jerry, can you go way back to that slide from the city talking about annexation and waivers of things?
It was way back, yeah.
That one. Can you explain this?
Those are their standard items that they typically request when proposed development is within their transition within the transitional zones. Just to put the applicant on notice that when the area becomes prime for annexation, that's something that they'll need to agree to willingly and that they won't challenge or protest. That is the requirement. And then also extension of utilities, that there could be cost involved that they would be tasked with paying for, whether it be sewer or water improvements.
So the very general statement is alluding to this specifically coming down the pike.
Right. Just to alert potential applicants that, if you're locating in this area, this is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, because you're in these, going to locate in these areas, designated areas, there may be additional requirements that the city may impose on your
development. We're not saying there will be, and this is done for anyone who wants to develop in that fringe area. Is that correct?
Well, and this is specific to conditional use permit requests that we get. We're thinking that the way to address that would be to put a notation on the table that when they're in the A1 district and they're within the Ames Urban Fringe Plan in those two designated areas that. But basically, they need to work with the city on any additional requirements that there might be.
Except that right now there aren't requirements for CUPs. This only applies to subdivisions and rezonings in certain places.
Correct.
So we're basically just, it's purely a heads up.
I think that's the city's intent.
Basically what we're saying is the city's got some things they'd love for you to sign if you're willing to, right?
That they need to work with the city.
But they don't need to work with the city on a conditional use permit.
Communicate if there's additional requirements, because
they're not legally obligated to work with the city. We've not signed an agreement with the city that says they're
right
for a conditional use permit, they're legally obligated.
Unless we somehow incorporated that language into whatever we do.
Into our conditions, which I'm sure the city would love for us to.
We're not making, I don't think that they're suggesting that. They just want applicants to know that where they're locating, if there may be additional requirements.
Okay.
And we're not looking at a CUP application tonight, and we're not looking at that language tonight. We're just looking at adding to this table for human services facilities and programs and saying that they need a CUP in all of the districts,
right,
as you've highlighted here.
And as staff, we're suggesting that we also add the statement to this table 90-1. To give applicants a heads up that they're in the Ames Urban Fringe and there may be additional requirements, and so they need to have discussion.
But I think now it's a good time, is I need to reemphasize that we are just considering tonight an amendment to the land development regulations,
correct,
which might allow this type of thing. We're not actually considering an application for this specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the applicant's going to tell us about their specific thing, but we just need to keep in mind our decision needs to be based on how appropriate this is for anything that might fall into this category in the future anywhere in the county. Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Okay.
All right.
So are we ready for questions for staff? How do we proceed here?
I think if you need any clarification on the staff report, let's go ahead and ask those questions. Otherwise, we'll move on to the applicant.
I have some questions, Chair.
Okay.
Looking at the text amendment document, the proposal to add several other human services uses that aren't really being asked for by YSS, but you're saying, I guess what I'm hearing you say is, let's take the opportunity to add some other things that might come up. Is that what you're doing here?
Yeah, it's more just, it's the title.
To broaden the request submitted by YSS to include the consideration of other human service uses, you say.
Yeah, so
you itemize several.
Yeah, the table would state human service facilities and programs, and again, it would be permitted in all districts with the submittal of a conditional use permit, and then there would be an exception if it's in an A1 district. If it has a high LISA score, it wouldn't be something that would be permitted. And then we are also suggesting that note be added that the city uses.
So you're not suggesting that those things that you itemized be in there?
This is just these things here. These are just typical. These might be some things that we might see in the future.
Okay. But I understood. I mean, several of them seem to be consistent with what YSS is asking for. I didn't understand public transportation services, nutrition, and disaster preparedness necessarily as being similar kind of uses. So I was kind of. But you're not suggesting they actually be itemized in there.
Yeah, because their submittal was more specific to just their organization's program. And we don't really have anything in the land development regulations other than what we have under the definition of family home. So we're looking at this as an opportunity to provide, an umbrella of, provide an avenue to accept applications. And again, we're suggesting that it be under the broad umbrella of human service facilities and programs, and that we're just trying to show you the types of things that you might get. I mean, there's probably many, many that we didn't come up with. But again, the only thing we really have is this definition of family home, which covers intellectual disabilities, child foster care, and then elder care.
And you're not suggesting any limits on capacity of an in home facility.
Those regulations would stay. So, if we get a request for more than that, then that would likely be the CUP process. Because right now, with intellectual disabilities, it's up to 8 persons.
And that's state law.
Yeah. So, but, you know, if we got something for larger numbers, if the regulations change, we'd be able to respond to it.
Staff in here, but this speech, this, you wouldn't mind setting this podium and saying your name and address for the record, please.
Andrew Allen, CEO at YSS. The business address is 420 Kellogg Avenue, but my personal residence is at Huxley at 1118 Timberlane Drive. I think Jerry did a good job of outlining the proposal. We're in the infancy of this project. Having said that, if you follow the news or read the paper, you'll know the opioid addiction crisis is becoming an epidemic. We know the need is great in the state of Iowa. It was estimated in 2013 there were 7,000 kids in our state that did not receive treatment who needed it. YSS has been in business for 40 years, providing substance abuse treatment for the past 35 years. We've served 4,300 kids. I happen to be one of them that got treatment 21 years ago. So I took over just short of 17 months ago at YSS, and we've got an opportunity to do here to do something really unique. I'm not sure that anybody's doing adolescent substance abuse well. We've got an adult model that's been forced on kids, really within the confines of Medicaid and private insurance. And what we're proposing to do is, you know, a public-private partnership with braided funding, with donor support, to be able to provide a unique service that meets individual needs, that really focuses on family and especially on the transition home. Oftentimes kids get, you know, 28 days or even 90 days of treatment and they're sent home to the same environment that they were in before, and makes it difficult for them to recover. So the site that we've identified, we've been looking for something in a rural setting, you know, close to services. This is the perfect site. But, you know, really appreciate the way that Jerry's thinking about this holistically, about, you know, we might find another site in the county should this one not work out. We sure appreciate the opportunity to work alongside the county. I'm concerned about the letter that the city of Ames has submitted. I think that to bind us in a county property to agreeing to things within the city that aren't currently a part of the urban fringe scares me. You know, things like future assessments that we'd be agreeing to, things that the owners, property owners expense. There's a lot of things that we're going to build into the front end of this, but if we've got to sign documents with the city that are going to incur future expense that we have no idea what they might be, that scares me from wanting to locate in the fringe or in a space where the city might have authority to impose future expenses that I wouldn't know about. So I sure appreciate your consideration. This is just the first step in a long process, and happy to answer any questions.
Jerry, could you go to the map that you showed us in terms of the proposed location?
The aerial?
Yeah. Go back one. I want to see it, too.
This?
Yeah, okay. Now I'll go to the next one. Okay. And so, remind me, currently the city of Ames, those two where?
It's just north of Highway 30, so this is about a half mile south of the city of Ames.
And to the east is where, from that property?
Pardon?
It's north. South Dakota Avenue is north.
Where's the city property? Yeah, you can tell about corporate limits, but
yeah.
Right in here.
Oh, is it? Okay, through over there.
So probably over 2 miles.
Yeah.
Approximately.
Is there any questions for the applicant?
How large a facility? How many clients are you looking at?
You know, we don't have it completely defined yet. We're doing some market research to see what it would bear. You know, as few as 8, maybe as many as 32 to start. You know, we're thinking about pods of eight. I think our, you know, the what we provided the city said maybe up to 50. We're not going to start with 50. We currently operate two facilities, 15 beds each, so 30 kids. It's in a residential neighborhood in Ames. What we know is, while we think we're great neighbors, and we are, and we'll even have neighbors that have testified to that, these kids deserve space to breathe. They need, you know, room to experience nature and not be confined to houses in a residential neighborhood.
How would the facility be licensed?
Currently, we're licensed through Iowa Department of Public Health, IDPH.
As?
Residential treatment.
Okay. You talk about farm. How many acres of this are farmable, and what specifically would you want to do with it?
Well, we're proposing 6 acres. There's more of this as farmable. I think the current property owner actually farmed a portion of this for a period of time. What we're trying to do is, you know, think about sustainable agriculture and connecting kids back to nature, and then also, you know, locally sourcing food that we would feed to the kids. So nutrition is going to be a big part of this. You know, spirituality is a big part of this. We're trying to be experiential. That's why we want to get them out in the out in the country. But we're proposing 6 acres. Kind of in the north west section that would be farmed. So not a big piece, but enough that we can grow food that the kids can eat.
If it's 74 acres, if you were to purchase this, could you see selling some of it off eventually?
Not part of the plan, no.
Not the plan? Plan would keep the whole thing?
Yeah.
Is this to serve a strictly Story County resident?
No. No, if we, and I've got a map here that shows the 4,300 kids that we've served over the last 35 years, and they come from all over the state. I'm sure some have come from out of state as well. You know, substance abuse treatment doesn't discriminate. You know, it's sure not, wouldn't be, from an economies of scale standpoint, be practical for any individual organization to have a facility in every county. So we would hope to be a destination location, serving, of course, Story County kids first, but then going out in concentric circles and continuing to serve the entire state and the region.
By these other counties and the out-of-state folks?
Yeah, there's no county reimbursement for this program, no city funding. All the funding is through Medicaid, so lower-income kids all have access to Medicaid. Or private insurance. The other third alternative payment would be private pay for families who want to send their kids but maybe don't have insurance.
The Medicaid doesn't take care of the construction of the facilities.
No, you're right. Yeah, so that's generally what we're doing is private fundraising for construction of the facilities. We'll sure come to the county and the city and other municipal entities, but my main target from a fundraising standpoint is private. But then operationally, we'll think, you know, long-term about how to continue to operate the program. And like we've been doing for 35 years, it's paid for by insurance. Sometimes they pay the full cost. A lot of times they don't.
Other questions for the applicant?
I'll just finish by just saying this is a really exciting time for YSS. And I think the opportunity to have a world-class facility, you know, in central Iowa, and Story County is something we should all be excited about. So thank you very much.
Considering the letter from Ames, have you gotten any indication as to when they anticipate, because we know that we'll annex that land?
It's in an urban service area, so it's in a prime location for annexation. It's owned by the McKay family. I think there's been some discussion about potentially annexing, but those plans fell to the wayside. They also own the land. The McKays own the land to the north, which would make this very close to the city's corporate limits.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they don't have any interest in annexing.
Are there any comments from the public? No comments from the public. more questions for staff certainly or up for grabs right now, but also just any discussion you have. Jared, I do have one question. So that I think you're right to think more broadly about this than just a single application, but it does make for a very broad category too. And I wonder, did you have any discussion or any thoughts about how critical a rural setting might be for a facility that would be allowed in this category? But what ISS has proposed certainly demands a rural setting.
Right.
But you could imagine, you know, something which is more like a hospital campus falling under this category too and locating out in the county because it's less expensive. You know, and then you can see also the city's concerns becoming, you know, you seem more justified in that kind of context.
Yeah, I think we just wanted to kind of leave it up to the applicants, you know, and kind of judge it that way. And, you know, there may be some instances where they wouldn't be supported by staff. You know, like what Andrew mentioned, you know, they want to be close to the city because they want to, you know, they want to be able to take them to church and various services and whatnot. So we're likely going to get applications like what they're submitting, where there's interest in locating in like a rural setting where they want their space, but they also need to be close to a community or the services that are offered by a city. You know, from the like the wastewater side, environmental health reviewed the request. They didn't have a lot of comments on the text amendment, but on a conditional use permit standpoint, this is large enough that it would put it into the DNR review purview. So, and that's something that I know they've given some consideration to, you know, what that's going to take to make that work with the numbers that they're hoping to have there.
What I'm hearing is that any applicant with a more urban or suburban type of proposal may also see the benefits of being in an urban or suburban place rather than out in the county.
Correct.
And that should limit the scope of the applications. We
purposely kind of left it broad. You know, and then, you know, we allow them in the commercial or more of the, you know, industrial type settings. If maybe it might be a good match for an affiliate to reuse an existing building that may not otherwise be refurbished. So we purposely left it that way.
Do you like Broadwood as in specific? Or would you prefer specific?
I like guidance. You know, I mean, there's a huge range of things that could be that could be proposed under that category.
Those are some of the typical things that you probably would see.
Yeah. I guess maybe my point is we can't assume that every application we get under this brand new category is going to be a working sustainable agriculture operation in conjunction with a treatment center.
Right, and if it's in an A1 district and if it has high LISA, it's something that they're not going to be permitted to do anyway.
Yes. Other questions, comments? Okay. Just one more reminder, we're actually voting on a recommendation to Board of Supervisors on a change to the table for conditional uses in the development regulations, not on the project itself. We'll see that down the road, presumably. Do we have a motion?
I'm sorry, I have a question. Jerry, could you explain what that amendment is under your recommendation?
Again, what they submitted was to amend the table specifically for residential treatment, lodging, and grounds to locate within the A1 district or other districts that at the Board of Supervisors' discretion, And again, from our review, we think that should be broadened to say human services facilities and programs be allowed in all districts except for the Greenbelt Conservation District with the granting of a conditional use permit. And then again, if it's an A1 district, to keep in line with the preservation of the farm ground, if it has a high LISA score, which we'll analyze that, if it's within that 267 to 300 range, it's something that they wouldn't be able to do there.
I'm sorry. So under your options, which is at the end, I think there is the alternatives for our action at the end.
Right, and we picked two because of the in light of the information that we received from the state of Ames to bring attention to the fact that if you're in the A1 district, if you're in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, under those two designated areas, that there may be potential additional conditions that the city may require to locate them.
So if we go for option two, it's the approval of the text amendment with additional amendments, and those say, what do those say?
That's the statement about the cities.
Yeah, that would be just
the discussion.
Okay. City may require.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
I just wrote up my two cents. I would be perfectly comfortable with the first recommendation and not including the catch-all statement about the city. I mean, it really has no applicability right now anyway because the city has no jurisdiction over CUPs. And if you submit all these applications as a courtesy to the city anyway.
Right. They receive the information on the text amendment. We would provide them with other documents.
So the city's going to have, on any proposal, the city's going to have plenty of opportunity to say to the Planning Commission, hey, we'd love for you to include a condition about signing this agreement or about doing this, and we can make that decision on a case-by-case basis.
I agree with you, Aaron. And rather than making it broad for Ames to do whatever they require, anything they want to in the CUP, I like number one.
I'm all for fringe area planning, but I don't think it's our job to enforce city policy.
There you go. I'll make a motion. Number one, the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommend the approval of the Code of Ordinance text amendment as put forth in case.
What is that? ORD.
Help me.
01-16.
Yeah, 1-16. To the Story County Board of Supervisors.
I second
it. I have a motion by Miller and a second by Merkin, or by Barnwell, to recommend approval of the text amendment to the Board of Supervisors. Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Cable?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
Barnwell?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Really appreciate it.
So your proposal will move on to the Board of Supervisors. Board of Investment. Board of Supervisors.
Board of Supervisors.
Thanks for coming in. All right, that takes us up to subdivision 12-16, the Hugh Minor Subdivision Plat. And Emily's going to present for us on this one.
Okay, this is a request for a minor subdivision. The applicants are William and Jean Van Sickle. They reside at 66212 Lincoln Way in Nevada. This property is located in Section 11 of Nevada Township in unincorporated Story County. So here's a vicinity map. The subject property is the red star there. It's located about smack dab in the middle of between Nevada and Colo, right on the south side of Lincoln Highway. So the zoning and surrounding land use, the current zoning of the property is the AR, Agricultural Residential District. There are surrounding AR properties. work, but okay. There are surrounding AR properties, as you can see, adjacent to the west and east. Within a quarter of a mile of this property, there are 16 dwellings. There are four parcels that are equal to or greater than 35 acres. And so in the A1 district, we would permit a dwelling, or we would have the, they would meet our requirement for the 35 acre minimum for a single family dwelling in the A1 district. There are nine parcels that are less than 35 acres. As you can see to the south here is the Chicago Northwestern Railroad. It's about 500 feet to the south of the subject property. So zooming in, we have some subdivisions nearby directly adjacent to the west of the subject property, which is here, is the Green Acre subdivision, and directly to the east is the Green Acre subdivision number 2. You can see it's surrounded on three sides by residential subdivisions. There is an ag subdivision to the northeast there. And also some houses that are in the A1 district. I'm sorry, that are located but not within subdivisions. So the current configuration of this parcel is a 5.72 acre parcel. Just a little background on the application. The applicant currently owns parcel B of the Green Acre subdivision, which is directly adjacent to the west of the subject property. On that property is a single-family dwelling and a detached garage, both of which were built in 1984. On the subject property, there is a Quonset and a machine shed that are, according to the applicant, were used for agricultural purposes previously, but they are considered accessory structures to the single-family dwelling located on parcel B of the Green Acre subdivision. Because of that, because these accessory structures don't have a primary principal use on the same parcel, P&D is requiring a restrictive covenant to ensure that these parcels are owned by the same owner until a single-family dwelling might be proposed on Lot 1. Because here's proposed Lot 1, and that includes the accessory structures. That would be a 2.09 net acre parcel. A proposed Lot 2 would be a 3.63 net acre parcel. Here's the proposed plat. As you can see, the existing structures on Lot 1, and there are no existing structures on Lot 2. Here's some site photos. Proposed Lot 1 kind of to the right here. Proposed Lot 2 is open space. There's a pretty wide right-of-way off Lincoln Way, but the tree line is about approximately the right-of-way setback line. Here's looking at proposed Lot 1, the Quonset here, the machine shed here. Looking southwest at the lot, you can see, well, you can't see, but in the background here's the house on the adjacent parcel. Here's looking southeast at proposed Lot 2, open space, currently open space. It was farmed until probably about 2013. Here's looking east along Lincoln Highway and north across. This is across from proposed Lot 2. It is a natural area. There are dwellings kind of to the northwest of the proposed subdivision. And looking west along Lincoln Way, this property is right along kind of that curve in the road. So the applicable regulations for a minor subdivision plat, the subdivision can't contain more than four new development lots. This one would contain two. All development lots within the subdivision are fronted on an existing public street. The subdivision includes no land set apart for new streets, alleys, parks, open space, schools, public uses, and no agriculture or minor subdivisions have been approved for the tracts being divided after 2003. So, comments from the interagency review team. Planning and development just had some questions about the proposed water source. The restrictive covenant we included in there. Environmental health just made a comment about this, the soils possibly requiring a mound or sand filter due to the type of soil, the wetness of the clay. But that would be determined at the time a septic system is needed. The Story County assessor said the land and improvements would be assessed as residential lots. So notifications were mailed to surrounding property owners on November 28th, and Story County Planning and Development did not receive any written or verbal comments on this proposed subdivision. So in summary, the subject property was created in 2000 through a plat of survey, which is why it is required to be a minor subdivision. The subject property is located in an area that is designated rural residential on the C2C future land use map. The proposed Hughes subdivision does meet the requirements for minor subdivision plat. About half of the parcel of the 34 parcels within a quarter mile of the subject property do contain single-family dwellings, so this is a consistent land use with the surrounding area. The size of the two proposed lots is consistent, like I said, with the surrounding residential properties. The subject property is not currently in agricultural production, so we won't be taking any land out of production. The property is surrounded by residential subdivisions to the north, west, and east. And the property owner agreed to submit a restrictive covenant regarding the existing accessory structures to conform with our land development regulations. So the alternatives for the commission are, I guess staff recommends the approval, recommends approval of the minor subdivision put forth in case SUB 1216.
Thank you. Any questions for the staff?
The applicant's daughter is here to answer any questions you might have.
No questions for staff? Applicant's daughter, would you like to address us? Anything that the staff didn't cover that you'd like us to know? I mean, if so, if you might step up to the podium, that'd be great. Stay in your name and address.
My name is Bree Vansickle, and we currently did just sign a contract to purchase the house portion of the property. So that will be staying in the family, so that's why we did the covenant with the lot one. So then that way those pieces will stay together for as far as we can tell into the future. It's a long contract. So, but other than that, my parents live in Colorado right now, so that's why I'm just here. I work in the auditor's office, so it was easy enough for me to be here tonight.
Any questions for the applicant? Thanks very much.
Yep.
Are there any comments from the public on this issue? Seeing none, we'll move on to planning commission discussion. Everything's clear?
Me?
Okay. I have one quick question. Is there any reason to expect that both of these lots would not eventually be built on? I mean, they're both buildable lots. And
they are both buildable lots.
I think you just have to anticipate that that would be the case.
Yeah.
And then the covenant to keep the buildings with the other lot would no longer apply once a principal.
Right. Once a zoning permit application would be submitted for a dwelling on that lot one. Yeah, it would become.
Gotcha.
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have a motion on this?
I move to approve according to option one.
Second.
So I have a motion by Barnwell and a second by Cable to recommend approval of the minor subdivision plat. Roll call vote, please.
Miller? Yes.
Barnwell?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Perkins?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you. Next up is a proposed amendment to the Urban Fringe text of the Urban Fringe Plan and the map associated with the Urban Fringe Plan. And that would be you, Derek?
That would be me.
Okay, great.
Lucky you. Okay, a little background information prompting this Ames Urban Fringe Plan text and map amendment. City of Ames received a request from Trinitas, a developer, to develop some land in Western Ames on the south side of Lincoln Way. It would include actually three separate parcels, a 21-acre parcel owned by George Belitzos and a 13-acre parcel owned by John R. Crane. Again, this is south side of Lincoln Way, east of 500th Avenue. Applicant is proposing to construct anywhere from 1 to 5 bedroom dwellings. They could be duplex townhomes, cottage-style homes, and they would like to do this by annexing and developing under the city standards. Property is also located in the Ames Urban Fringe. The east 21-acre parcel is, and we've got a map to show you where these parcels are. The east one-third is designated highway-oriented commercial. Another third is natural areas, and then the south one-third is designated urban residential. The west 13-acre parcel is mostly designated urban residential. There's a small little portion that is designated natural areas in the northeast area. Again, the primary designation of the north portion of the 21-acre parcel is a rural urban transition area, and only urban service areas may be annexed under the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. The applicant initially requested an amendment changing the highway-oriented commercial designation and the rural-urban transition. Again, there's the primary category, which is the rural-urban transition. The subcategory is highway-oriented commercial. They're requesting to change that to urban service area and urban residential. So changing it to a primary category of urban service area and a subcategory of urban residential. After it was reviewed by the staff, the Campus Fortress property is being brought into this request. They are also interested in annexing. They're located to the west of the 21-acre parcel. It also includes Mr. Belitzo's parcel where the dwelling is, which is about 1.5 acres. And again, all these properties have that same highway-oriented commercial and rural-urban transitional designation. But in order for the properties to be annexed, they have to have this urban service area designation. City staff was also concerned about some of the language in the plan because there is also a commercial node, convenience commercial node, which is primarily to identify the need to have like retail-type services. And it's shown by like a large asterisk, and it's to identify the need to serve anywhere from maybe 2,000 to 3,000 people within a certain radius of this area. And those areas, those uses within that node have the option of annexing. So that's one of the things with the amendment that's being proposed, that that the highway-oriented designated areas in the urban service area also have that option of being annexed instead of changing the designation to something that currently permits annexation. So that's really what this is about, to address the issue with the highway-oriented commercial, because again, they're not permitted to be annexed. So it would be a text amendment to allow that, and that's what the italics language is. It would be a new policy 10 in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, And it says when highway-oriented commercial property is within an urban service area designation, a property may be annexed without a land use framework map amendment. The intent of this option is to further the policies of the convenience commercial node, which again, those can be annexed under the plan. And the next thing is to actually make the amendment to the plan from that rural-urban transition to urban service. So here's some, finally, some thanks to look at, other than words. This is the western Ames area. You've got the corporate limits shown here, the red line. We're on the south side of Lincoln Way. The requested map and text amendment involved the area that's crosshatched. Okay, the area that's going to propose for development would be this 21-acre parcel here, and then this 13-acre here. There's actually, for some reason, there's inset in this, I think it's about a 12-acre parcel, there's another 1-acre parcel. So the development activity would be in here, but the amendment would primarily be the north one-third. This is from the Ames River Fringe Plan document. This is the land use classes, and this is the area that we're looking at. Currently, it's identified as rural-urban transition, and there's a request to change that to urban services, which, again, makes that prime for annexation. A little closer detail. Again, this is the subcategory. The area is outlined in black. It shows up as pink. That's highway-oriented commercial. And, again, the idea is to change that from rural-urban transition to that urban services to allow it to be annexed. Process to amend the plan consistent with the 2080 agreement. First starts with the discussion. It has to go to the City of Ames, City of Gilbert, Story County. That did take place. Ames City Council supported the request at their September 13, 2016 meeting. So again, have that discussion about whether or not an application should be accepted. City of Gilbert took action to accept the request for an application on October 3. Story County Board of Supervisors took action on the 4th. At the October 4th meeting, we did have some individuals here interested in the request, raising concerns about stormwater drainage, questions about traffic. We did contact the planning department at Ames, and they have indicated to us that they're working on the traffic study for this area. They think, while there hasn't been a development plan submitted, but they do think at least one access will be achieved off of Lincoln Way and then one access off of 500th Avenue to the west. And they indicated that any issues with stormwater will have to be designed by the applicant's engineer and that will be addressed at the subdivision plat review process. On 11/29, Planning and Development Department did send notices to property owners within a quarter mile. We did receive a call from somebody who lives south of this area, and it was primarily a general inquiry about what was being requested, and they didn't raise any objections to the request. Ames Planning and Zoning Commission considered this item at their meeting November 2. They said no one from the public spoke. Commission asked for background information on the plan, clarification on the process for annexing. Ultimately, they approved it with a 4-1 vote. And again, this was before their city council. The actual text and map amendment, November 22, was unanimously approved. Initially, they are thinking that this process may take anywhere from 7 to 9 months. Applicant is interested in beginning construction in 2017 with occupancy occurring in 2018. Additional items that need to take place would be to have all three, which is required in the plan, all three entities would have to support the text and map amendment. Applicant would initiate an annexation request. The issues with transportation, sanitary, sewer, as well as storm water drainage would need to be addressed. That would be through the subdivision planning process. Because of the type of development that's proposed, it's probably also going to involve some changes to the city's zoning ordinance to allow the type of units that they are proposing to build. So just to show you some site photos, we took this when the weather was, I guess it was probably after a heavy rain, actually. I was going to say the weather was nice, but you'll see standing water. Mr. Belitzo's 1.5-acre parcel, this is where his dwelling is, will be panning to the west. That's the 21-acre parcel, and then a closer view. Looking west on Leakin Way, this is looking east. This is Campus Fortress. Again, they're interested in annexing into the city. Notice some of the standing water. This is the 13-acre parcel. We took this photo off of 500th Avenue. We're looking east. Gravel Road currently looking to the north. Planning and development staff do support the requested text and map amendment. We do support and agree that it's appropriate to have that commercial node of uses along Leakin Way. And you see that right now. You saw it in the photos. I think we just dealt with a request for a car sales on the northeast corner of that intersection. Which brings us to the alternatives, which is we're requesting, suggesting that the Planning and Zoning Commission recommend approval of the text and map amendment to the Ames River Fringe plan to the Story County Board of Supervisors and direct staff to place this on the board's meeting agenda. With that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
I do have a question regarding the stormwater issue there, because I was at the October 4th County Supervisors meeting, and I also had an occasion to meet some of the neighbors later, and there currently is a problem, which they asked me about, and I said that my understanding was that if this was annexed, the city would deal with that issue. It would not be an issue the county would deal with, nor this commission. That this is that what's being asked of us simply is to allow, do something that would allow the annexation, and then all the development would be under the city ordinances, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
So, Jerry, did you, regarding the car sales, there's a huge stormwater problem there. I don't know if you know that it was completely underwater last big rain we had. They were using a truck and a snowplow blade to shove the water across the road.
Right. And, yeah, we are aware of that. And I know there's been some communication with our engineering division on that. And I did see the same thing when I say the site photos of this. I think there's some questions about whether or not the existing culverts and drainage systems, if some of that was maybe obstructed, and that's what caused potentially some of the standing water that was at that location.
That whole area north of, on the north side of Leakin Way, was completely underwater, pretty far east.
Yeah, I don't think it was that to the building, but the parking area.
No, the building was in the water. Well, anyway, speaking of stormwater, it's not, but what I'm hearing is that Ames, if it's annexed, it's an Ames problem.
I mean, you saw it in the photos. It was in the ditches. It was on some of the private properties. It is a concern, and those concerns were raised at the Board of Supervisors meeting, and you're correct. It's something that will need to be addressed after it's annexed, and they'll do that with the submittal of the actual subdivision plan. Other questions for staff?
Is the city of Ames technically the applicant here?
Well, we're a participant.
The county is the ram. Yeah. Okay. So, no one from the city is here? Are there any comments from the public on this proposal? Okay, seeing none. Any further discussion, or are we ready for action?
I move approval of alternate one.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
A motion by Merck and a second by Gable to recommend approval of the proposal. Roll call vote, please.
Cardinal?
Yes.
Gable?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Merck?
Yes.
Motion carries. That brings us to the partial street right-of-way vacation. Jerry?
That is me. Okay, the request before the Planning and Zoning Commission, again, is we were contacted, Planning and Development staff was contacted by three property owners who own parcels in Iowa Center. They are interested in acquiring some alleyways in the east portion of Jackson Street. We will show you specifically what those areas are to try to assist with increasing lot areas for existing homes, increased lot areas for proposed improvements, whether it be dwelling, accessory structures, and then it also will provide space for septic systems. So this is where we're at. We're north of the city of Maxwell, about 2 miles. We're in the Iowa Center village area. A little closer view. Where the red arrows are, it shows you the proposed alleys that they're requesting to be vacated. We've got another map that even shows this much more clear than this. But the roads are 650th to the north, the north-south road, 35th east-west, Main Street, north-south, and then Jackson Street, the eastern edge of Jackson Street. That's what they're proposing, requesting a vacation on. And all these alleys, by the way, are unimproved. The county, the developer, never did any rock or any other type of surface or grading improvements in these locations. So black and white kind of shows you the locations. We're dealing with three property owners, Jones, Mooseburger. Jones also owns these, and then Smith owns property here. Beautiful color map that Emily assisted with shows the what it would look like once the land, the alleyways are divvied up. So this would be one parcel here. Ken Mon Investments, or Ken Mooseburger. This would be a separate parcel. This would be a parcel here. They would get half of this north-south right-of-way. These right-of-ways here and on the south end. And then the Smith property would get half of that alleyway to the east. So, again, here's the applicable property owners, Susan Smith. She's the executor for Mary J. Tyler, Kenny Mooseburger, and Gordon and Patricia Smith. Site photos that we took, this is looking east down 295th Street. This is on the north end. This is looking to the south. Looking southeast toward Mooseburger's dwelling. Looking south on Main Street, again, gravel roads. Looking south, this is the furthest east alleyway area where that brush is. In here. Mooseburger dwelling. You can see they're making some improvements to it. This is the east edge of Jackson Street. This is looking to the west on Jackson. This is looking north from Jackson. And the next one is out on 650th Avenue. We're looking to the east. Conceptual review was on November 10. We did receive some comments from Environmental Health. They supported it. They're happy that there's more space available for septic systems. Auditor's office commented that the east portion of Jackson Street should also be included in the request, and so it was added. Planning and Development Department received a written agreement which addresses the maps that we showed, that they're all in agreement and on the areas that would be divided to the three respective property owners. We received that November 29. We sent notices to all the property owners within a quarter of a mile on the 29th of November. A courtesy copy was also sent to the city of Maxwell. We also sent it to the utilities in that area. To date, no comments were received back. Recommendation, as previously stated, the requested alleys and street right-of-ways are currently unimproved. It will increase the lot areas for building improvements, whether it be a dwelling, accessory building, and provide space for septic systems. And the impact to the neighborhood should be minimal because of the existing street systems. The traffic will still be able to circulate on the, you know, the roads within the existing development and the county road as well. So that brings us to the alternative, which is planning staff is recommending that alternative one be approved, which is Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval of the alley and partial street right-of-way vacation of Jackson Street located in Iowa Center as put forth in case admin 2-16 to the Story County Board of Supervisors and direct staff to place this item on the Board of Supervisors meeting agenda.
Are there any questions for the staff?
I assume that this came up because Iowa Center is totally unincorporated, period.
It is unincorporated. It's a burb. That's, it's a village.
I don't know. My husband and I counted the potential. How many people or how many dwellings were there on our way to the vet in Maxwell? I think we counted about 26.
One of the applicants is here.
Okay. Any other questions for staff? Applicant. Do you have anything to add to the staff report? Okay. All right. Any members of the public here to comment on this proposal? Looks like there's none. Planning Commission?
Need for a motion?
Great.
Okay. I make a motion that we accept number one up there. Do I need to read it?
No.
Nope. Okay.
A second?
I second.
A motion by Miller, second by Barnwell, to forward on staff's recommendations, our recommendations to Board of Supervisors. We get a roll call vote.
Murphy?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Motion is approved. Thanks for coming in. Sorry it took so long to get to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We are on to. What are we on to? Consideration of the special events ordinance. And Jerry, do you have a staff report, or are we just...
Well, it's the ordinance.
Okay, so we've got a couple of work sessions on this.
Correct.
And now we're actually being asked to take action on it, one way or the other.
Correct.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, it's just you should all have a copy of the ordinance. Currently, the way special events are dealt with is through the conditional use permit process. It identifies music, sporting events, and related activities. Conditional use permits involve a conceptual review, which are reviewed by county staff. They go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then ultimately to the Board of Supervisors for action. Application fee is $275. Process can be anywhere from a month to a little bit longer than that. This was something that was on the 2015 work program for our department over to 2016. We were to look at this, and we are viewing this as a standalone ordinance. It would be a part of the county's code of ordinances. It would be Chapter 83. The features would be that, first of all, the application cost would be $50. This is something that would be it would be reviewed by staff, ultimately approved by the Board of Supervisors through their review process. There would be some exceptions, certain uses that would not be required to have a special event permit. I think those are the primary things that would apply to larger groups. So you're looking at groups larger than 250 people, participants, that type of thing. So I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Okay. Just before we do staff questions, just one comment, and that I want to thank staff for their hard work on this. You know, this has been a thankless task because we obviously don't agree on it, but I know that you worked hard on it, and we do appreciate
that.
True. As you recall, our last meeting, I don't think you two were here, but we just ultimately said, you know, we discussed this as much as we can. We think it's as good as we can get it, and it's probably time to just bring it for recommendations one way or the other. So that's where we are now. Are there any questions for the staff about the ordinance?
Well, none. I haven't been here last meeting. For the life of me, I still can't understand why it should have to go to the Board of Supervisors with all the guidance in here, all the review by all the departments. I think it should just be something that staff approve and then not the supervisors.
Maybe one to think about with a lot of these special events have requests for liquor license or liquor sales, and so that part of it is going to be before the Board of Supervisors. So this would give them more of a big picture on what's being requested. And I think as far as their role in it, I think they would view it as something that would be more of a consent agenda item. It wouldn't be something that would be a full presentation by staff. Unless there were issues that came up through the review, then we certainly would present it to the Board. It just kind of gives them the bigger picture of, because I think a lot of these do involve liquor and alcohol sales.
So in other words, there's some risk associated with these, and supervisors should be aware.
For sure.
Yeah. I just do.
Jerry, what is the deadline to get this to met?
Oh, is this the middle? We started with, I think, 30-day, and that was reduced to like 21 days. It's really kind of a guideline. We have submittal deadlines for everything that we have, but I can tell you that we've worked with everybody. If we can get it and get it to the other departments and get comments back, we always try to work.
But that's not in the...
Is that
stated in here? Here?
It should say 21 days.
I guess they haven't read it all.
Yeah, if you look at 83.08, special events application shall be submitted to the Story County Planning and Development Department 21 calendar days prior to the events. And again, part of the issue with these is organizers of events, you know, they think of a lot of different things, but they sometimes don't think about if there's a special permit or requirement in the entity where they want to do their event. And so a lot of times you're forced with, you know, once you're contacted, because with the current process, they would have to get to us 2 months ahead of time. With this, you know, 3 weeks before their event. And like I said, we're going to try to work with anybody and everybody to the extent that we can. But a lot of times you're forced with having to make that decision of telling them they can't do it, and they spent, you know, sometimes these things are planned over several months. So this just gives us more tools to work with people, provide more flexibility.
So if it's a 3-hour event and you have 50,000 people coming, you don't need a permit?
The focus is primarily things that are more than 4 hours.
I don't think it's needed at all. Like Jared said, we've hashed this over, and quite frankly, I don't think that this is needed whatsoever. And so I would like to submit it to the Board of Supervisors to simply reject this special events chapter 83.
Are there any other questions for the staff before we get to see if there's any public comment officially? Is there any public comment? Yeah, from the end. Okay. Then we can deliberate. I would just my two cents is really short. And I, the biggest upside of this is that it takes, for some special events, it takes it out of hands of the CUP process, shortens the process, that makes it easier. And that's good. The biggest downside for me is just this could come in handy in 2 weeks, but it might be 5 years before we ever need to apply it. I'm not sure about creating a whole new set of regulations, just and unintended consequences, just for the odd occasion that this could come in handy.
And the exemptions, I mean, that's simply a partial list of the potential exemptions.
Well, the existing standards that we have, I didn't tell you, those would go away.
That's what I mean. That's what we mean. Yeah. It takes, but this also applies to a broader set of events than the current CUP does.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Well, I can see the importance of this as far as public safety, sheriff's office, fire, ambulance. I think that's a good thing that they would have to be, those departments would have to be notified if you're having an event.
That would call your department to communicate with whose jurisdiction it would be, what ambulance district, what police department, fire department.
I'm totally against regulations. We get to deal with many of them now. I have to swim through them every day. But I can see that that's kind of an important point of this, to have those county offices know this is going on.
But don't you think that if somebody came to Jerry and says, hey, what's the detail? What do we have to do? We want to have this event out there. What do we have to go through? And Jerry just hands them a list or tells them, hey, listen, these are the areas that you really need to contact. We don't have any ruling on regulations on this, but here's the things that you need to do and make sure that you've done for your own protection.
Yeah, will they do it? Will they do it? If they have to pay,
I'm just saying just the conversation. Just coming to the planning and development department and say, hey, we're doing this, we have to follow any rules.
Well, through this application, then the county is responsible to notify all these offices, Jerry?
Through this process, we would be the shepherd of that information, correct? So, right now, we... Under the county's current zoning development regulations, we have temporary facilities for music events, sporting events, entertainment, religious meetings, and similar uses would require a conditional use permit in the A1 and the Greenbelt Conservation Districts.
That we already have.
That you already have. That would go away with this thing.
Can you read the beginning of that again?
It says temporary facilities for music.
Okay, that's good. So that doesn't actually even apply to the event itself. It applies to the facilities for the event. I think that's kind of the point we've missed. So we're broadening that. This broadens it from the facilities for an event to the event wholly.
Could a temporary facility be a tent? Could it be
parking lot, field?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah, I understand, but I mean, it's a distinction.
Probably the distinction, though, is the temporary.
Does that have a cap on how many people before that?
No, and there's no detection either. So it would apply to any. Under, it would apply to less than 250.
Or it's left up to the interpretation of whoever is in your seat or our seat at the time.
Right, but if we got one in, I don't, under this provision, I wouldn't have a discretion of saying if you're 50, you don't need one. If you're 150, you do.
Because this says that under this line item, it says that they need a conditional use permit under A1s or green belt. So they'd have to go through the whole brush fire process. My recommendation would be to recommend this to be declined. And to eliminate that line on this table of conditional.
And are you saying that events don't need any process? Is that what you mean?
Not temporary. If it's an ongoing thing, like we dealt with, you know, the farm or whatever you want to call it that was down
Progress.
There by...
Farm Progress?
No. That one that's got the ride in the...
Black place?
Yeah. You know, or those types of things. I mean, that's an ongoing situation. That's not a 1 or 2 day event.
But somebody could get, if they requested to do a multiple day, it would be one permit. We would issue one permit for multiple.
Yeah, but it would have to go through the whole conditional use process.
Well, under this, it would just be under staff and the other entities reviewing it, and then ultimately.
Then how do you distinguish this from this?
I don't understand what your question is.
Okay, this is the table of conditional uses.
Correct.
And so it says temporary facilities for music events and so on. And you got to get a conditional use permit, which means going through all of this thing, whether if they're in A1 or Greenbelt.
Right. It's basically saying those are the only two districts where they're permitted, but you got to get a conditional use permit to do it.
So there's a whole process for a temporary.
Right, and this is temporary also. This
so, you know.
Yeah, but this you wouldn't have to deal with.
Yeah, I know, but correct. There's still this. Yeah. So how do you distinguish? They come to you and say,
it'll go away.
You remove it. You want a motion?
Okay. Yeah, you're correct, Jerry. So this proposes to make everything that's in the conditional use chapter now an administrative process. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're ready for a motion.
I would move that we recommend removal of the temporary facility from the table of conditional uses, and further that we forward the proposed special events ordinance to the Board of Supervisors recommending approval.
I second.
One thing I always forget to do is ask if there's any discussion on the motion. And I do have a question on that motion. Have you prepared the ordinance itself, like, or the adoption?
The actual ordinance paperwork? Yeah, we've started it.
Okay. I mean,
that's what it will look like in the code of ordinances in the book.
Gotcha. But this doesn't state anything about repeal of a line of a portion of the plan development regulations, does it?
But that could easily follow.
Yeah, I mean, that could be added to this. No, it probably wouldn't be added to this. In the actual ordinance that we prepare,
no.
That gets published, it would be in.
Right. I guess I'm just saying that I think it needs to be clear that, correct me if I'm wrong, your intent is that if one's going to be adopted, the other needs to be repealed.
Correct.
Right. We would add that in the ordinance that gets published.
Right. And we're just making a recommendation, so that doesn't have to be a formal format. But.
I had a question. My question is, how is the public going to know that they need a permit for this?
Part of it is education. We need to do what we can to educate using whatever means we can, using our website, doing outreach, doing whatever we can to get the message out there.
And with this going to the Board of Supervisors, there ought to be some level of news coverage on that. If I could add a comment, I like the idea of making this an administrative process. I think that makes it easier and more consistently applied. And so increases the chances of protecting the public for these events, which is what I would support.
More discussion? On the motion.
On the motion. Obviously, I agree with taking the line item off the table of conditional uses. At the same time, in addition to what Jerry said, how many more regulations do we need for the public? And what Aaron said, the potential for this coming up, I mean, maybe next week, but not in this weather, but we're not outside of it. But it may not occur for 5, 7, 10 years. And so, and situations change between now and then. And bluntly, I don't think it's needed whatsoever.
you have any issues with the structure of the motion or any...
Yeah, the structure of the motion is that rather than to send it on to the Board of Supervisors for approval, I would say send it on to the Board of Supervisors for denial.
Are you ready to vote on the motion as presented?
Sure.
Okay. You get a roll call vote, please.
Is motion made?
Yes.
There is a motion made
to approve it.
To approve, okay. And appeal.
I missed that. I don't know.
Sorry. Okay. Are you ready for a vote?
Okay.
Roll call, please.
Miller?
No.
Hartwell?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes. Okay. The motion carries. And we are on.
Aren't you glad I
made your connection? Here on the last agenda item, Amelia is going to present to us about the detail and novelty farm.
I made a PowerPoint. Oh, is it plugged in? Oh.
The computer on.
Slideshow. Okay. All right. Okay. So we're going to be talking about the farm retail novelty conditional use permit process update. You remember, you guys recommended this process update to us at your November 2nd meeting, and also we talked about the need to take a look at the home business permitting process to ensure smaller farm retailers' novelty could go through that administrative process. So the result is that we've changed the definition. This is the same as you saw at the last meeting. There are just two sentences added in red. Farm retailer novelty shall enhance crop and or livestock production through educational, entertainment, or commercial use of land. It is ancillary to crop and or livestock production and shall not alter or detract from primary and or livestock production, primary crop and or livestock production use. So then the conditional use process itself, we're proposing an update. The current process, you guys are pretty familiar with it. It goes to you guys and then the Board of Adjustment, but first there's conceptual review. That process won't change. Neither will the need to meet the six criteria for compatibility or the other grounds for denial. What does change is that there will be supplemental standards for the submission, and that will consist of a written narrative that the applicant must submit along with their conditional use permit application. That written narrative must demonstrate that the farm retailer novelty promotes the county's rural character, it enhances existing crop and or livestock production, is accessory in a variety of ways to the primary crop and or livestock production, that existing buildings will be used to their full capacity before new ones are constructed, and new ones will not hurt the crop and or livestock production or rural character. Hours of operation, as well as traffic generated by the use, must meet the standards of approval in the conditional use permit process. The applicant must outline how they will negate any potential negative impacts on the county's rural character, and they also must discuss any issues with dust that could arise and impact neighboring properties. Additionally, the applicant must submit several other submittals, including a dust control plan, if it's determined necessary from the previous section, a sanitary facilities plan, an overflow parking plan. The overflow parking plan also includes that temporary overflow parking may be located on grass, but that the parking area should not be greater in size than 25% of the primary parking area. They also must submit an emergency plan, proof of liability insurance, and they must meet all other state or federal regulations or local regulations. So the proposal will also mean that we will update Table 90.1 so that it shows there are supplemental standards now. And we'll also update Table 88.5 parking ratios by type.
because the farm retailer novelty use is not currently in that table. So these are maximums, one space for every 200 square feet of enclosed area, one space for every 1,000 square feet of outdoor activity area. So that is the conditional use permit process update. Home business update. The main thing is that we've added on to the beginning of the home business chapter this, that a conditional use permit process shall be obtained for a home business or a farm retailer novelty that cannot meet the standards of approval outlined in the home business chapter. So before, we realized that if they couldn't meet the standards of approval, they were done. But now they can get a conditional use permit. And it also clarifies that farm retailer of novelty can go through the home business and permitting process if they meet the current standards of approval. One modification to the current standards of approval for the home business, we just clarified the traffic standard of approval so that it now reads, all home business activities shall not generate traffic substantially in excess of 6 trips a day per person living in the household. Previously, I think it said something about the average trips a day, and that was unclear. So these are all your alternatives. We'd recommend approving alternative 1 to recommend the approval of the proposed ordinance and amendments related to farm retail and novelty to the Story County Board of Supervisors and direct staff to place the item on the Board of Supervisors meeting agenda.
Let me see if I have this right. I can get a home business permit just through the administrative process, meeting the standards that have always been in there.
Mm-hmm.
And if my retail and novelty farm can meet all those standards that have been in there for home business, I can just call it a home business and get a home business permit.
Mm-hmm.
If my home business doesn't meet those basic standards, I can get like a home business plus, basically, by going through the CDP process.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also do a more intense retail novelty farm by going through the CUP process.
Mm-hmm.
And then the new supplemental standards would apply.
Just to the farm retailer novelty.
Retail novelty mm-hmm. farm. Okay. Can I offer one quick comment? Well, I'm going to offer two quick comments. One, I think we can, from the definition, I think we can not have that additional text in there because you already added it to the supplemental standards. And you're starting to insert regulation into a definition. I bet the county attorney's office might have an issue with that.
They looked at it and didn't have
an issue with it.
So what specifically are you referring to?
Just the fact that it has to be ancillary, probably.
So, no, it's just that you go from, you start by, with the definition, and then you insert some regulations about retail novelty farms. And then you go back to definition. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And this is in the list of definitions in the development regulations, right?
Yeah, so what we're proposing is in red. So everything that's black is existing today. Yeah.
Right, and what I'm saying is everything you've added in red, you also added in the supplemental standards. So why muck up with the definition?
I don't think it's verbatim in the supplemental standards. Necessarily, but it is there. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a glossary of definitions.
We can
this is like a definition plus regulation together.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Also, I would suggest, other than, so saying farm, comma, retail, or novelty, that is a glossary convention, right? It's to help you find the definition. If you're going to start, you've got a whole bunch of things that are farm, farmstead, farm, farmy, farm. So you're going to go there to look in the glossary for a definition about this special kind of farm. But beyond that, everywhere else in the document, it can just be retail and novelty farm.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all.
What does the term novelty mean?
Unique.
I think
it's out there. It hasn't even been submitted yet.
The definition says it relates to things such as tours, demonstrations, petting zoos, and the like.
Where is that?
It's on your first page here in the existing definition.
I think think it can easily just be a retail park because all the things it describes are offered as a retail product or service.
I think the word novelty adds absolutely nothing.
But it also gives you that extra dimension, too, of something that it gives you the creative side, the exploratory side.
Educational side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of the push term people. That, you know, invites all the trouble. I mean, there's retail and then there's, you know, carnival. Mm-hmm. Which is not selling farm products under retail. It's
right. Which this
selling energy.
We're trying to get the focus back to it with the added language in the definition to make it about farming, about ag use, you know, related to crops and or livestock.
Mm-hmm. But if the definition focus. But if the term also throws people, points people in the right wrong direction, then it's easy enough to change it. I don't know. Detail and experiential, detail and educational, or I think everything you did, well, except for education, everything you described is typically offered for retail sale, whether it's a service or a product.
I guess
even if it's a novelty, it's going to be for sale, you can buy it.
And I guess it depends on your definition of retail as a specific good or an experience, and does novelty encapsulate the sale of the experience as well?
I mean, I'm not, what's the goal here? I think we all know, but I mean, it's the elephant in the room that we're not. How does a farm enhance production through education? It can't enhance the production, can it enhance its own production through education of people being bused in and entertained about farming? Mm-hmm. Maybe education and entertainment shouldn't be in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the goal is, but is the goal to tease out?
The goal is to not detract or take land out of from the rural character or take land out of production. I think that would be the opposite of what that's saying.
Because, I mean, you know, you always think of the corn mazes. I mean, that's kind of has an entertaining value to it. And especially if you try to do that at night, that's real entertaining, right? Try to work your way through it.
That's a special event.
Well, no, it wouldn't.
How long is that thing going to last? And you're going to have more than 250. Oh, but not all at the same time.
Right, Jerry. So, I mean, I think that's what, the entertainment value is, things like that. You're bringing people there, you know, you're giving them this experience that they're not going to experience in the urban setting. So I think that's why that term, entertainment, is a part of the educational aspect of it.
I think, you know, the difficulty is in interpreting, you know, whether mini train or whatever that thing is, where that fits, and whether it enhances crop and livestock production, which I, for one, seriously doubt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or so many of the other things that have been proposed with the case that we're familiar with. So I don't know how you write regulation for that.
Is that the Blacks thing down by Cambridge?
There is an appeal process.
For a conditional use permit?
Mm-hmm.
You would file with a court of record if
you have
30 days.
Yeah, it goes to Board of Adjustment, and they've got 30 days to challenge a decision.
How did we do it on the, remind me, the Black location and all the activities that they got going on there? Did they fall under this?
It was under this.
Farm and novelty?
Farm, retail, or novelty.
Okay. And so now how does this change
anything that we went through for blocks.
They have to submit additional documents that show how they're related to agriculture and the county's rural character.
And there's a focus on using existing
buildings
instead of coming in with a design to do 15 buildings, which really has nothing that relates to the existing character of an area.
Mm-hmm. And it cannot be larger than the crop or livestock production area.
Not to say that they won't be doing improvements, but you know, the focus should be on what you have and what you have to offer to the general public. You know, there should be that element there to start with.
So I suppose this doesn't hurt anything in terms of it would still allow reasonable amount of activity. It clears up what the application should have in it.
Yeah.
And ties it back to agriculture and production.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main focus, really.
Exactly.
Okay. And a lot of the additional requirements address concerns that were brought in the case of the Black Farm up from neighbors, impact on neighboring.
Mm-hmm.
What's the logic between for the 1C in the additional, the supplemental regulations, existing buildings to be used to the full capacity prior to the construction of new buildings?
The existing buildings should be used to the full capacity before the construction. You came up with that one.
So again, the focus is what you have to offer that is so special to the general public. So it kind of gets to some of the examples that we have out there where it's, you know, we're adding all these buildings and we're changing the fabric, the character of an area. And the focus should start with, you know, what's there today, existing buildings, existing whatever it is that they're doing with regard to production or livestock. We looked at a lot of different ways to try to hone in on kind of controlling that, you know, percentage of the parcel, and kind of landed on that as being the focus.
Okay.
Which usually that's what you get. I mean, it's, you know, they are really interested in showing the general public what they're doing with what they have, and there's not really a need to add multiple buildings.
Right.
Not to say that there won't be some improvement. If it's successful, they need to do that. But just to kind of deal with this, okay, how big should this be? If it's a 40-acre parcel, is it okay for them to come up with some plan to add 10 or 15 buildings? You know, I think that's where some of the concerns with the neighbors on the one that was before you came into play. It's with, it, there was a lot of changes that happened to that area.
I think we might be looking at this wrong. Like, it strikes me that Santa Grove Old Orchard, also the name of
I couldn't remember.
Right?
Yeah, okay. That's not the one down by Cambridge. Which one's that?
This is the one.
Yes.
Down by Cambridge?
Is that they're carrying on activities that in any other situation would require to be located in the commercial district. And so to me, like, the point is, can you demonstrate that a rural agricultural location is critical to the activity you want to carry out? Not just cheaper, not just convenient because you've already started building something up, but it's essential to carrying out what you want to achieve with that. So a demonstration of dogs catching frisbees, is it essential that it be located in a rural location with agricultural character?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the things, agritourism, demonstration farms, even diet, you know, say, I don't want to just focus on the tourism attraction side of it, because there's a whole lot of value adding that you can do to agricultural crops that is economically important to farms. This should encompass too. And obviously, the location is essential then, because you want to be able to take something, a product off the farm, process it in some way, add value to it, put a label on it, increase its value, and sell it again.
And this really deals with where you're inviting the general public to your property, you know, for extra remuneration and to educate them or to show them mm-hmm. some special way of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So it's a different element than what you just
said.
It doesn't really say that it's the extra element. I mean, what you were just talking about was like if they've got an apple orchard. And so they take the apples and they mix batter out of it. And they're inviting the public to come by.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the things that are in here, though, came about because of some of the things that they were proposing to do at Center Grove. They were going to have kids there. It was almost like a daycare center. They were going to do a lot of things that, I mean, I look, there's other things around the county where there are farms and, you know, people come to buy things, but I don't know that they need emergency plans. That's the one I was just looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, my gosh, who are we drawing into this net?
If we need to have an emergency
plan. Yeah, I'm thinking of moss, pumpkin farms.
Well,
they're a small operation. You know?
Why do they need to go through all this rigmarole?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, that's all they're selling is pumpkins, right?
Well, it's not some other stuff.
Throughout the year?
All sorts of garden crops and jams and honey and...
Mm-hmm. And if they can meet the home business requirements.
That's an administrative.
That's why we have that in there.
I like that part, by the way.
Yeah.
That's quite clever.
I would like to suggest taking the word entertainment out of your added text. I mean, I think it's easy to get behind the idea of enhancing crop and livestock production through education. Educational activities, and a corn maze is educational
mm-hmm.
as well as being, you know, fun. I think the word entertainment is just asking, it's just, you know, it's really muddying the water.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's potentially borrowing trouble. And in the case of the farm whose name I can't remember, Center Grove. That's, you know, the area that they really wanted to expand in that I think was problematic for the neighbors. You know, a dog frisbee catching demonstration, for instance.
I think it's more the sound.
The sound,
mm-hmm. you know, the train.
And all that.
I mean, a train can be very educational, but
right.
I think that. Having that word in there is really inviting a lot of,
mm-hmm.
You know.
So if you want to sell eggs off your farm or tomatoes, you'd have to have an additional use permit?
No, because in most cases you can meet the requirements,
mm-hmm.
the baked-in requirements of the whole business.
Yeah.
Rent, goats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's a one-time permit.
Yeah.
Nothing serious.
So that word, no, but that does not fall under this. I mean, I'm being serious.
But you're going to sell eggs year round and sell that at home. Did you say eggs?
Or eggs or produce or whatever.
If we take out the definition of entertainment, would that keep somebody from having like a... Because a lot of them do want to have actual entertainment, like music, like folk music or something.
Mm-hmm.
Would that still be...
How does folk music enhance livestock production?
Or the character. Mm-hmm. Character.
That is the problem. It's a slippery slope to, mm-hmm. you know, loudspeakers while I'm sitting on my back porch on the weekend.
Well, how about if it only deals with having to rezone the land that whatever's on is on.
Now, I mean, that would be the case, though, because that's the point of asking for a conditional use permit,
yeah.
is because you don't want to go, you don't want to or unable to rezone the land
yeah.
to
mm-hmm.
use. I also question the language of enhancing farm production. It's difficult. It's difficult language because none of this is necessary to actually enhance the. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I like to get ancillary to. Mm-hmm. I think that's excellent.
And I think I was trying to incorporate some of that value added agriculture that you talked about last time. In that.
So I'm looking at the clock here, and I'm aware that the board supervisors is not going to take action on
anything until the first year.
Until after the end of January. Mm-hmm. And don't want to just quit because we're tired.
Who's
right? I know. Endless family over there. But I also don't want to say let's postpone this without giving the staff some clear direction about what to do in the meantime. Unless you just want to rest your brains and take it up exactly as proposed here again in January. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think what I'm hearing from the other folks is that the aspect of entertainment does not necessarily correlate with relating to crop and or livestock production.
So remove entertainment and the word enhancement from that.
Mm-hmm. I think
it's
so.
The concept of entertainment. Because there may be other wording in here that also lends to that concept of entertainment.
There were some other words in there that we're glad that we took out.
I mean, if you want to add value to, I think is okay. Too. If you want to look for a replacement there.
Instead of enhance?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You said the attorney's office didn't have a problem with adding that extra stuff in the definition?
No. And I'm looking at the definition below it as well of farmstead, and it's similar in the shall language.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would also like to see something, this may just be me, but I'd like to see something put in there about an agricultural setting being essential to the nature of the activity. That's kind of a hard test.
That's a hard test
to meet if you think about it. Because
it is.
The train, the dog show, the playground equipment type of stuff that they have there, you know, that really starts to boil it down.
So you think each element must meet that criteria?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, the proposal as a whole, whatever it includes.
The activities that they would like to carry out.
Right. The agricultural setting needs to be essential to that.
I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
We're hearing
it. Should help clarify.
So I might suggest a motion that we remand this back to staff to make some of the changes we talked about. I think we're making progress. This is a tough issue.
We need a motion for that.
We do need a motion for that, yep.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Cable and a second by Merkin. Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Merkin?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Farnwell?
Yes.
If that is in one comment, I would agree that this is difficult. We're trying to, it's almost like trying to keep water in your hands. You know, what are we trying to do here? And I think we all know, but how you put it in words in the ordinance is kind of. We appreciate your continued work.
It's a challenge. I mean, the interest in these type of related activities is going through the roof. You know, and this is going to have serious interplay with the special events ordinance too, when people start wanting to have weddings on these specialty farms. So.
Thank you. Keep us busy, for sure.
All right, we have staff comments.
I've been having cremated, and I'm going to have 300 people.
Speaking of Center Grove Orchard, one of the conditions that they...
And I'm going to get fined because I didn't have enough time.
...that they had was they were supposed to do a study, traffic study, and provide some information about the grading and drainage with the train track that they put in. They hired Snyder and Associates to do both of those, and we have some documents, and so those will be before the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. Anyway.
Okay.
And then, on behalf of our staff, I would just like to thank Carla and Nancy for your service to the Planning and Zoning Commission. We appreciated your lively discussion and input, and you're going to be missed. So thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Same to you.
All right. Any commission comments? Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
For a second.
Second.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.